Welcome to From the Heart with me, Dawn Lister, and today's guest, Lucy Bishop Sheher. Lucy is a fat yoga teacher and trainer. She is a size inclusive advocate. She is from Bristol, but she is currently living in London. Welcome, Lucy. Wonderful Thanks. To have you.
Thanks for having me. It's so nice to be here.
Oh, thank you. I'm delighted to have you on the pod for our what's hopefully going to be a really interesting and important conversation. We were chatting just briefly, weren't we, before we came on about how I've kind of avoided this subject for a really long time. I've been teaching yoga myself for over 30 years and always would say I was in a larger body, sometimes larger than others, and kind of always felt like I was a bit cool with it and it was fine. But actually over the years I've kind of realized I've kind of carried a huge amount of shame about my size and you know, being a yoga teacher, it isn't the norm, is it? It's not the norm to be in a larger body at all. And I've kind of really shied away from putting my form in any kind of yoga posture out there into the arena. The only times I've ever done it, it's received some uncomfortable comments, so I've kind of avoided it. And it feels like this is it's the time to have this conversation. It feels like the time, it feels really important, and I feel a little bit nervous about it. And so when I came across your Instagram profile and looked through it, I felt so empowered, and it actually felt really joyful.
Oh good, I'm glad. I try to have I'm a joyful and like a silly person, and I think in spiritual practices we can feel like they need to be very serious, and I think there is a difference between serious and focused. Like I think a focused practice is incredibly powerful, but like as a person I like have a lot of energy, and I'm, you know, like I don't want to have to edit who I am in order to show up in the space, and it's been really great, I think, being able to have the social media platform so people know what I'm like, so that when I show up places it's like, oh well, you get who was on the internet, it's all the same. But I'm so glad it was a nice time to look through. That's what we love to hear. And I think also like you say, teachers in bigger bodies have always been there. They've always been there. Maybe they haven't had the opportunities, maybe they haven't had the press, maybe they've not felt like they can show up in the way that maybe they're starting to now. But humans of all creeds, you know, have been sharing the practice for an incredibly long time. I think it's only much later we've got this idea of what they should look like and how damaging that's been to anybody who's outside of that.
That is so true, and I'm so excited to get into this conversation. Let's put this in a little bit of context to start with. So how was it that you came to be a yoga teacher? And then how did you from there end up becoming an advocate for people in larger bodies?
So I did my teacher training about 11 years ago. I had just graduated from uni and got this job teaching English abroad. It paid quite well, or when I was 21, thought paid very well. And came back with all this, you know, lump sum of cash. And my friend was going away to a yoga teacher training. And I was like, I like yoga, I'll come. No plans to be a teacher. No sort of, just like wanting to delve into the practice. Also like go away for a bit and have a nice time. Go with my friend somewhere. And we went to the south of India. It was amazing. But I walked away from that training going, I should never be a yoga teacher. I was made to feel very not uncomfortable in my body. And I was in a smaller body then than I am now. At that time, I was still like very much in a dieting cycle, very much trying to shrink my body, very uncomfortable with my body. Mm-hmm. And I very much got the message loud and clear that I shouldn't be teaching. I didn't get sort of much care, I would say, from the teaching staff, much interest. There was definitely, if you could do more challenging, more complex postures, you were taken more seriously. There were many sort of obvious and undercurrent things that left that institution going, I'm not meant to be in this space in this way.
Wow.
Which was like obviously not what you want to hear, but I think also is a lot of the reason, like if you wanted to if I wanted to seriously become a yoga teacher at that time, that wouldn't have been the training mm-hmm. I would have gone to. It was just one we picked at random in a location that we wanted to go. Mm-hmm. It's not great. And then I worked in theatre for 6 years. I ran a theatre company and I worked as a movement director. And I sort of taught a little bit of part-time yoga on the side, mostly one-to-ones for people who didn't really feel comfortable going to yoga classes. And then the pandemic happened and I lost all my work because theatre stopped running. And I was like, I need to make some money. And then I was like, I've got this yoga teacher training. And I started in the summer teaching small groups of friends in parks. And I was like, I love this. I was like, this is the best. I'm so happy and I feel so connected to this. And I feel so connected to sharing the practice. And then I started my Instagram because I just wanted to advertise where I was teaching in the park, because I was like, I'm never going to be that person teaching in the fancy yoga studio. Mm-hmm. And then people, I thought no one would ever look at it. So I just put my real opinions up there. And then people really chimed with that. And then studios would reach out to me being like, we'd love to have teachers who have a more inclusive practice. And whether that's a box ticking exercise or whether that's from a genuine want of serving an audience that isn't being served, who can say? I think some places one, some places another. And the people who came to my classes were people who felt like they couldn't come to class. And they saw someone who looked like them, or they saw someone who expressed that they were there to support the person who can't do a handstand for 20 minutes and the person who like maybe has a wrist injury and needs to adapt for that. And yeah, that sort of became the focus of my practice and the focus of my teaching practice and what I tend to train teachers in. And yeah, I just feel very passionately that anyone of any body size should feel welcome in the space. And I don't think enough work is being done to do that. And I think I can add to that conversation in a helpful way from a place of lived experience. But also I live in a small fat body. So I am fat, but I'm not, I live in a place where I have some, I experience anti-fat bias, but I also have some thin privilege. So it is a space where I do hold more privilege than someone in a bigger body than me. So I feel like I can straddle the space quite well. Mm-hmm. And we should be getting much more people in bigger bodies than me advocating for that experience and coming in and also being in the space. But I think it's taking steps, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for that. That's really interesting. Yeah, I guess I kind of fell into yoga similarly myself. I kind of came to it from when I was in my late teens as a kind of healing practice after having been through quite a lot of trauma in my early years, and fell into teaching. It was never my intention. I kind of ended up covering a class for my teacher by accident. Back then, you didn't even need a certificate. You know, anybody could teach pretty much. And my teacher was off and she just said, oh, can you cover for me? And I did it. And I was like, oh my God, it's amazing. So then yeah. I then spent the next 3 or 4 years doing a very good training. It was pretty good. But back then I was probably in a smaller body because I had a significant eating disorder and had done for, you know, I would say up until my early 30s. And yoga taught me to love my body.
Yeah.
However it looks, whether it be a size 12 or a size 20, it doesn't actually matter. You know, that's not what the practice is about. And I wonder if you could speak a little to that. You know, what does yoga and the practice of yoga has to do with being in a fat body? What's your thoughts around that?
Well, I think it's really heartbreaking that often yoga really is something that adds to this idea that our body is wrong, when it really is, like for me personally as well, such a healing tool in my recovery from my eating disorder, my recovery from diet culture and diet cycling. Understanding that my body is my home and that I also am not just my body, you know, there's such empowerment in that, and knowing that I think there's a lot of focus now on yoga being not just a physical practice, as there should be. As someone in a bigger body, like we're only just being included in the physical practice. And I don't think that should take away from the vastness of what yoga is. But at the same time, the physical practice is so powerful. And for many of us, we're only just getting to experience it, understand it, be included in it. Mm. And yoga is political, and weight stigma is political. Mm. We are, you know, fat people are blamed for the failure of the NHS. Mm. Fat people get less, you know, don't get as many jobs. They get paid less than the jobs that they're in. You know, there's so many ways that the world tells fat people that they are wrong and that they are bad. And that is just real. Like that is a stigma that exists and that we can't pretend doesn't exist. But when you can find tools towards self-acceptance, body acceptance, tools that help you to look after yourself, allow you to rest, allow you to be with yourself, allow you to operate in the world in a way that is peaceful, some of that becomes a little bit less heavy.
Yeah.
And it really breaks my heart that a practice that is so healing, and not just people in bigger bodies, so many other groups as well, is really the groups who really need it don't get it, or aren't allowed, or are priced out, or are made to feel uncomfortable. And it's it's really like upsetting, I would say.
Mm.
And it makes me really annoyed. And it's actually quite easy fixes. Like, I don't think to teach people in bigger bodies is that complicated. You just have to be able to have honest conversations about it, a little bit of training, a little bit of context. It's not that different. But I think people want to ignore bigger bodies because we've been told that they're disgusting and they're horrible and they shouldn't be around us. And that is it's all just like a lot and unnecessary and so disconnected from the root of yoga really is. It feels so horrible.
Yeah. Thank you for that explanation. That's really interesting, really thought provoking. It's made me, I was having this conversation exactly this morning actually with a client who works in the NHS, and they were saying something similar about people who are in larger bodies being shamed for, you know, it's your fault that the NHS is on its knees and it's your fault. And it's such a bigger story, isn't it? You know, it's really, you can't just say because somebody's in a larger body that everything that's wrong with the NHS is their issue.
Yeah. And so much we know about what we've been told about fatness isn't true. Mm-hmm. Like, there are some conditions that weight is a contributing factor, but weight loss is never the thing that stops that improves the condition. It's health promoting behaviors, and those health promoting behaviors may or may not lead to weight loss, but the marker of health is not weight. The marker of health is how we live our lives. And also, you know, some things are genetic. Like, there's so many reasons why people get ill or have difficulties, and we've just, it's simpler to be like, well, it's because they're fat. Whereas it's a multitude of reasons.
Yeah.
But obviously that's a harder conversation to have, that requires more nuanced care. And there's lots of great people who talk about weight stigma in the NHS better than I would be able to.
I think it's a starting place. It's a really, you know, I'm even now I'm finding this, like, I'm feeling all my biases and the stuff that I've been told and heard and been drilled into me from a child,
kind of
raging around in my head. I mean, I remember I went for a hospital appointment myself for a heart thing about 4 years ago, and I was probably, I don't know, about size 14, 16 at the time, who knows, don't know. And I was having palpitations, and as it turned out, it was my menopause, but, you know, no one knew about menopause because no one talks about it because it's a women's issue.
Yeah.
So it's recently become a thing. And I remember they did the doctor said to me, oh, your BMI is really high, that's why you're having palpitations, go on a diet. And I went, I go to the gym. I said, I weight train, I do teach yoga. I said, I walk everywhere. I said, I don't overeat. I said, this is just my shape. I'm always like this.
And also, even if you didn't do all those things, you still deserve proper healthcare.
Quite
like, we feel like we have to make these excuses. We have to say, and I think as like bigger people who work in movement, we're like one of the good ones. Yeah. I think I get much less online abuse because I'm moving my body. People are like, she's fat, but she exercises, so she probably has to be fat. Whereas if I was maybe a fashion Instagram person, I would get a lot more abuse because there's no like performance of being good. And I think we make these excuses where we're like, well, it's okay because I do this, this, and this, but it's okay if you don't do any of those things. Do, you know, those things also might not be available to you. You might not be able to live in a body who can move in that way.
Mm.
But and you still deserve healthcare that is unjudgmental, and you still deserve to go to a yoga class and be held in the space. Those things shouldn't be conditional of how we live our lives. And if you were in a thin body, if someone came in and was in a very thin body, they wouldn't do that. They would go to the neck because they wouldn't go, oh, your BMI, which is a scale that's been disproved.
Exactly. I think that was my point. And when I came out of the appointment, I was quite upset, and I happened to know the nurse, and she said, and she asked me what was wrong, and I told her, and she said, oh, it's all rubbish. She doesn't know what you're talking about. She said, we don't even go with the BMI anymore. She says, yeah. I don't know what he was talking about. She says, BMI is fine. She says, you're fine. She says, you're one of the fittest people I know. I mean, this was pre-COVID and long COVID. I'm not so fit now, but that's by the by. But it was really interesting. I really felt shamed. And I would say, for me, coming back to the yoga practice, you know, being on your mat is the place where you come home to this body that I think if you've been in a larger body and you spent most of your life being shamed, you learn to make peace with it, to actually inhabit it. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, like feel where you begin and end and appreciate and have gratitude for it and feel comfortable in it and to actually inhabit that. Because I wonder, I know for me, for many years, I don't feel I did really inhabit this body. I didn't love it. I wouldn't look in the mirror, and I didn't like to be undressed. And, you know, I was always on a diet, and I always felt like not quite good enough as a teacher because I didn't look like everybody else that I felt was, you know, a yogi, which was willowy, very willowy, with long flowing hair and a load of tattoos. That wasn't me. I've made up for it now. I have tattoos. But, you know, but coming onto your mat and taking, you know, holding the postures and using your breath and feeling into your body. Oh my God, what a gift.
Like, what an absolute gift. But also I think something that is missed so much for everyone. And I think what people think is by teaching an inclusive practice, like if there's no one there that looks like they need an inclusive practice, then we teach, you know, like no variations, no options. We teach strong, we don't have breaks.
Right.
Actually, you could have anyone there with an eating disorder in anybody. Eating disorders are at the highest rate of all time now, post-pandemic. And when we don't show options, when we don't give autonomy to people in their practice, what we are telling them indirectly is that the harder you practice, the more valuable you are, the more you work, the more you sweat, you don't get to have options. And that is a reinforcing of the stronger, the fitter, the thinner you are, the better you are. And that is damaging to people in all bodies. That is not helpful or kind. It doesn't come from a place of empowering your students. It comes from a place of telling them there's one right way to do things, which is, I think, if there's just insane. Like I my practice is so different every day. Like, why wouldn't anyone else's be?
Yeah, that is so true. I read an interesting quote recently, and this isn't a direct quotation because I can't remember it, but it was something along the lines of, you don't need to earn a rest.
Yeah.
You know, have a rest so that the bit that you do next is well resourced. That wasn't exactly it, but that was the
yeah.
And I thought, my God, that's so true. You know, over the years, I've learned the importance of Nidra and Shavasana and, you know, rather than using the practice to punish myself to try and get stronger and thinner and whatever else it was I was trying to hone, it's as the practice itself developed and became deeper, and I would say use the word embodied, so I began to embody the practice, it became about sitting on the mat and going, okay, what do I need today? What do I need? And actually, if you aren't in your body and aren't okay with it and aren't communicating with what your needs are, then you don't know, do you?
And we're so told to dissociate from feeling into our bodies, especially as women. I would say, like, we are told to ignore our pain, to fill ourselves up with painkillers. Like, especially like around our periods. Like I have PCOS, I have incredibly painful periods. I like pass out and vomit from the pain of my periods. And that is, you know, the most help I've ever had with that is been given like a slightly stronger painkiller from the doctors. And that's, you know, there are other ways I manage that now, but our bodies are trying to tell us so much all of the time, and so much of our life is distraction and being removed from that. Especially if you're a person who lives in a city, you know, if you work a job with a computer, like there's so much focus outwards that then to be like, oh, now you have to embody your practice in your 1 hour week, embody your body in your 1 hour week where you show up to your mat. I think it's absolutely possible. I think you need a great teacher. I think you need that consistent practice. It might take a long time for that to drop in, but it's such a different way of thinking about your body. Just one we're not really used to. And if you think your body's changed, like you want to change your body, then how do you show your body care in the present? If you're like, this isn't good enough. How do you then show up and go, I'm really listening to you and I want to know what you want? If you're like, I don't like you, I want you to be different.
Oh my God, you've given me the chills. That's 100%. Let's just hold that for a moment. You know, if you don't like your body, how can you show up for it and know what it needs? I mean, God, you're so right.
And also we're told that our bodies are temporary in the way that, I feel like I was told by so many people and so many companies in different ways that like there was a thin girl inside of me trying to get out, like that there was like the real me. I feel like the messaging of so many diets, especially in the noughties, was like the real you is the thin you that is like you're stopping from being there. It's just like, actually, when you sit and think about it, it's insane. I was so accepting of the fact that people are just like naturally thin, and we celebrate that, like, oh, someone's naturally thin, but they can really like put away loads of junk food and not cut on weight. That's something we celebrate. We cannot understand that people are just naturally fat.
Yeah.
Like, that can't be real.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make, that doesn't make any sense.
That is
so, a basis.
That is so true. And I would say, for me, I am naturally in a bigger body. I'm not, you know, and I'm kind of mindful about how I say this, but I'm not somebody that particularly overeats or eats a lot of junk or, yeah. I mean, I have days where I eat more, but, you know, this is just how I am. And I have in my 50s made peace with it. And I quite often know, you know, I'll look in the mirror and, you know, I don't fit into certain types of clothes and stuff because I'm very curvaceous. But I think, yeah, you're amazing though. You know, you've birthed three children, you know, you look after lots of people, you look after yourself, you have lots of experiences in this body. And I have a right to those experiences, despite the fact that I'm in a larger body. And I want to go with that word despite, because I think that we shouldn't have to feel that way, but we are still made to feel that way. I almost feel like, although there is more progress being made towards acceptance of people, it's almost like you're allowed to, even although you're big, you're allowed to wear beautiful clothes, even although you're big, you're allowed to be a yoga teacher, even although, and actually, why are we still having to have that conversation? Like,
I think we have to still have that conversation because the stigma is so, I don't think we are at a place where we can be like, well, let's all just treat bodies the same.
Yeah.
And I do understand, like, sometimes the tone of that is very gross. Like, if it's from advertising, it's like, even though you're fat, we'll let you wear our clothes this time. And like, that is horrible. Like, that should just be like, we're extending all our sizes forever because we want all humans to be able to wear, and even like extending sizes to wear, you know, like, there's still like a cutoff point of where people are allowed to be. But in terms of how we talk about ourselves, in terms of body acceptance, I don't think we're at a place where like we can go, well, we all just should accept ourselves, because that's ignoring the very real stigma and barriers people face every single day.
Yeah.
Which is hard.
Yes. Yeah. I think I'm just always been in that place where, why are we having to have this conversation? It's fucking ridiculous, frankly. Yeah. Yes, we do swear on this podcast. but I hear you. It's a bit like saying, let's not talk about sexism.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be there. It is there.
Yeah. You know,
in the same way body shaming is there. What would you say about, you know, how diet culture and body shaming has infiltrated the yoga world? How do you think that happened? What's your thoughts on it?
Oh, I think it's big. I think diet culture has impacted and infiltrated like every element of life to some degree. I think the yoga space has, and the fitness space, like I think yoga intersects with fitness and it intersects with wellness. And in both of those spaces, diet culture is like the big, you know, especially fitness. The fact that we have like yoga in gyms, or that we might teach other movement practices in yoga studios, or like people, like there's just now so much integration. And I think as people who work in yoga, we have to acknowledge that we do also sort of work in fitness. And we should think about how that impacts what we offer if we're teaching the physical practice. And I think there has become this ideal with this like gym body, and also there's become this ideal with wellness that the well person is someone who eats clean and moves all the time, and it's not a diet, it's a lifestyle, but the lifestyle is just a diet that's really hard to keep up. So
and expensive,
and it's something people are selling you, like, yeah. I think we have to remember, I think it all comes from being sold stuff. And obviously, like, I run a business, I sell yoga, like that is what I do. But how am I going to sell it? I think it threads back to what you're saying about it'd be great if we didn't have to have these conversations. Yeah. But we need to acknowledge how things need to change. Like, I see a lot of studios at the moment being like, we welcome all bodies. And I'm like, but what have you done structurally inside to change the systemic problems that have meant for years and years and years? In some spaces, people have never felt comfortable. They come once and they leave. One post being like, all bodies welcome, or one plus size teacher allowed to teach one beginner's class, is not going to shift the experience of all of these people who are coming in, not feeling comfortable, sometimes getting body shamed, sometimes getting ignored. Or like one that used to happen to me all the time was people like being really like, wow, your practice is so amazing. How did you learn to do that? And it's like, oh, just like anyone else, like, I don't think there's any better or worse. I mean, how can you be good or bad at yoga? But like, and I think, you know, like you said about the comment on your post being like, wow, this shows that anyone can do it. I think the sentiment of that comes from a really great place. Mm-hmm. But it is if you wouldn't say it to someone in a smaller body, why are you saying it to someone in a bigger body? Mm-hmm. I think there is like a lot of love that can come from sort of the online community of seeing, like, I really believe my brain chemistry has been changed by my feed being just full of diverse bodies doing yoga or like fashion. Like, I follow so many curvy, fat, super fat people living life, being great. And looking at that every day, I think has permanently changed the way I see bodies, mm-hmm. and my appreciation of bodies and how I feel about bodies. Mm-hmm. And it is so simple, but if we're talking about the yoga space, like, you need to get people into that space. And to get people in, you have to acknowledge all the damage that has been done to them. And you have to examine how diet culture is showing up in your space. And there's like simple things like, are your mats so close together that someone in a bigger body would feel uncomfortable? Are your mats so small that someone who's very tall wouldn't feel comfortable to practice in this space? Mm. Have you got an accessibility page on your website? Is there, for people who can't take the stairs, is there an alternative if you're upstairs? What does your social media look like? Have you trained your teachers in inclusive practices? You know, and there's lots of other things we should be training our teachers in as well, of course. But not every space has to be a specialist inclusive space. That would be great, but we're allowed lots of different types of yoga studios. That is okay. What really pisses me off is like when now it's this trend to be inclusive and people are like, oh, we're inclusive because we say we're inclusive. And I'm like, what's the actual work you've done to change? Because it's a big change that needs to happen on many different levels. And it's work. And it's okay if you want to do that work really slowly, but maybe don't put up big banners being like, all bodies welcome, if you haven't done it yet. It's okay to change slowly. if anything, that's probably going to be more meaningful. But yeah, I see, like, you know, the yoga to shred and yoga for weight loss, and like these things exist. And when you see something like that, you're like, wow, diet culture has fully infected yoga. And it's so at odds with coming home to your body or coming home to your sense of self. And I think lots of people aren't interested in untangling them, because I don't think you can be interested in untangling them if you still believe it's better to be thinner.
Gosh, yeah. That's a big one, isn't it?
Yeah. And also, it's not your fault if you think that. The world around you has conditioned you into that. That hasn't come out of nowhere. But if you're trying to be a person who works in a practice which is about, you know, care and looking after yourself and accepting yourself, then I think you are a person who has to do that work. To me, that's my opinion.
I so agree. I mean, I've had conversations with, you know, I am a studio owner, and I've had conversations with teachers over the years around, you know, them not feeling comfortable with, you know, people in bigger bodies, you know, being promoted. You know, we've had those conversations, you know, and, you know, saying, well, we shouldn't be encouraging people to stay in that body. And I find that, it's caused quite a bit of friction, as you can imagine, but because my viewpoint on it is that the practice of yoga has nothing to do with what size you happen to be. It's yoga. You know, if we're practicing the asana, the meditation, the breath work, the mindset work, if we're doing the whole practice, then we find where we're meant to be naturally, which might be larger and it might be smaller, and it doesn't really matter. That's not what it's about. And it's not about judging people for how they look or how you perceive they should look, in inverted commas, to be accepted. And I think that's the thing, as you're saying, it's like, you know, we've all been fed that being skinny is the only thing that's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I bought, off topic very slightly, but I bought Vogue for the first time a couple of months ago. I've never bought Vogue in my life because I'm very much like a vintage girl. What can I buy? Vintage, or like, if I buy nice clothes, they last forever and ever. I don't follow trends, partly because there's no way I could get a pair of jeans over my cankles, frankly. they stick, they get stuck. So I've never really fed into fashion, you know. But they had I don't know if you saw it, they had one month it was big models.
Yeah.
In much bigger bodies, and I just pulled it off the shelf, and I'm like, oh my god, it's me.
Yeah.
Fashion. But they only had, throughout the whole of the magazine, the feature of the three bigger models, and then everybody else was size zero. I was like, oh my god, I'm never buying this magazine again. You know what, this is just such a, what's it called, when they just, it was a token. And you know,
that
feels sad. And I kind of feel a little bit about, maybe in yoga, that is what's happening. There's a bit of tokenism.
Oh, of course. I would also say, like I would say, I have, and it's so funny as like a white middle class woman to be like, I have been hired as a token, like that, just because of my body size. Obviously I am a person who experiences weight stigma, but it's like I find it quite odd sometimes. But also, it's a, sometimes a tick box exercise is a step.
Yeah,
it's like if we bring in the quota, we bring in the tick box, we see how it goes, that, and then it goes well, maybe it will move towards a more authentic inclusion later on. I think a tick box is better than nothing. And it's a beginning, it's a place to begin. And also, in order for it not to be a tick box, we have to expect the people in power to have done all the unlearning, and maybe that's too much to ask for. If people have lived their whole lives immersed in diet culture, believing that not even that thin is better, but thin has a higher moral value. Mm-hmm. I think it is interesting what you say about the teachers saying that people in bigger bodies promote a state of body that we shouldn't be promoting. Mm-hmm. I think by someone existing, they're not promoting anything. I find that a really challenging thing that is said. I find it really, to me, it's just so, like, I struggle to argue with it because it's just, it seems so, like, I don't understand how you could think that. I don't know how that you get to that point by someone simply existing, that someone is trying to make you that way of living. But also, I think it comes in yoga, there's a little bit of that fake guru culture that trickles down, where your teacher is like, I know what's best for you. You are my followers and you should do what I think is right. And I think being thin is right. Mm. And that's placing moral value on a body type. And I don't think we should be like saying that anyone has higher moral value or higher value than any other person. It seems really dehumanizing. It removes that person's autonomy completely. It's just that person existing in a body. And I think fat people doing stuff is political sometimes by being a fat person, where fat people, like, I think that putting fat bodies on the front page of Vogue is political. But I don't think those people are promoting anything. They're just showing that they exist. And for someone to say, by showing that you exist, I don't think you should, what they're saying is, I don't think you should exist.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. And we say promoting fatness, but what they're saying is, I think you're wrong and you're bad and I don't think you should exist. And I think if you said that to someone who said that, they'd be like, oh gosh, no, I just think they should change.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
And as you were saying that, I mean, there's so many truth bombs here. As you were saying that, I was thinking, you know, what would the conversation be that I would be having? So I've had this conversation, and it's always, and whenever it's said, and I say, but I'm in a big body and I've been teaching a long time and this is my career, and I see a lot of people and they're like, oh yeah, but you're different because you're healthy, you just happen to be bigger. And I always say, well, that's really presumptuous because you don't know what somebody's story is and you don't actually know what my truth is. I could be going home and guzzling Mars bars all day for all you know, and if I was, it's none of your business. And there might be a very damn good reason why I'm using food as a way of coping with X, Y, or Z. And that's, again, that's not any of the business. I kind of feel like in the yoga world, there is a sense of, you know, if you don't look a certain way, that you're bringing shame upon your practice or something. You know, it's like you're out of control. I think that's the word that has been given to me. You know, you're not in control of yourself. What's wrong with you that you look like this, or you act, you know, that you have this certain you know, plus size image or whatever. And I hate all that languaging, which is, I guess, why I've avoided this conversation for so long, because it makes me so uncomfortable. I mean, I feel uncomfortable just having the conversation now, frankly.
I mean, but it's just shame. It's just, you're trying to shame people. And I don't understand how that is with the path of yoga, making someone feel bad for existing. I don't understand how anyone can conflate those two things. I don't see how that is working with non-violence, working in a non-harming. You are taking away someone's autonomy, their experience. You're also saying every student who comes to my class who is thin is healthy. So many people have invisible disabilities. So many people in smaller bodies are living with eating disorders or in recovery from eating disorders. So many people have so many other health conditions. Like, you have no idea what's going on with someone. And it is presumptuous. And I don't think you think everyone in a thin body is healthy. I just think you hate fat people.
Yeah,
like, I think that is just the truth.
That is the point. And let's go there then. Why do you think people hate fat people?
I think people have been told to hate fat people. Mm-hmm. I think if we, in the same way we have this westernized beauty standard, and we have, we praise people who look young and all the rest of it. If there's not a standard to come against, then we can't sell things. If everyone loves themselves, it's all about money. It's all about capitalism. It's all about money. It's all about trying to make you feel bad so you feel like you need to buy stuff. That's literally it. Like, it is actually that simple. And I think from my logical part of my brain, when I finally dropped in and was like, oh, if diets worked, it would have worked already. If anything they were selling me was true, like, I've been doing this for about 15 years trying to change my body, if it was possible, it would have happened. They tell me it's my willpower. They tell me, like, I'm the problem, but, like, I've dedicated myself to changing my body, hurting myself, harming myself for this long. It doesn't work. And, like, I think when, and then you think about how much time you've wasted. As soon as I started thinking about that, I was like, I can't waste any more time sitting in my house thinking about how to change my body and how much I hate myself. Like, it's just theft of you, which is insane. But also the wellness, the diet industry, like, they are multi-billion pound industries. Like, they are huge. Yeah. And also they've never worked. We're just getting fatter and fatter and fatter and fatter.
That is so true.
Yeah. And diets fuck your metabolism and they make you bigger. One of the biggest, like, things that happens before people gain weight is go on a diet. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. It makes you bigger. It makes you disconnected from your hunger, disconnected from your health. You know, you can't, if you're, it took me so long to get rid of the feeling that being hungry and not eating was, like, a good thing that I should celebrate. Like I used to be so cool. Like, if I was hungry, I didn't eat. That used to be a thing that I really congratulated myself on. It's so disconnected from, my body is telling me something. It's telling me that it needs nourishment. It's telling me it needs fuel. And I'm ignoring it. Yeah. I'm proud of myself for doing that. Like, it's so messed up. And I think there's so much freedom in realizing that, like, you don't need to change and that you don't need to spend loads of money on things that ultimately make you miserable. I love a face mask. I love nice clothes. I like to get my hair done. Do you know what I mean? All the, like, I'm not, like, completely out of, I guess,
self-care.
Yeah, the beauty industry as well. Like, I think fashion is fun. And, like, I like to get dressed up. And I think there's ways you can play with it. Mm-hmm. But as long as that's not, like, the core of where your value comes from. Yeah. And, you know, I also, at the same time, don't think we should be shaming anyone who feels like they need to do a lot to themselves to be who they feel good in. Because if they, you know, when we maybe are judgmental to people who have a lot of plastic surgery or, you know, wear a lot of makeup, it's like, that makes them feel good. It's as bad as telling people they shouldn't do that stuff is as bad as telling people they should do it. Whatever allows you to walk through the world in a way that makes you feel good, absolutely go for it. But I would love for that to come from a place of self-acceptance and self-expression rather than a place of self-hate and diminishing and making smaller.
Yeah.
That's what I would love for you.
Let's not try and invisible people. You said earlier in your words there, you expressed that, you know, how capitalism has really been at the root of this. And I really relate to that. I think that if that's what the yoga industry has become about, it's become an industry, which makes me uncomfortable. It's something I struggle with as somebody who has a studio. You know, I work as hard as I can to make it accessible. There's people that come for free. You know, we run workshops. To support all different types of groups of people. It's not about making money, it's about offering the practice. And it's always been something I do alongside my proper job of being a therapist, because I've always found the practice so important and so nourishing for me. And because of that, any practice I've taught to the best of my ability with the skills that I had and awareness at the time has been about offering an inclusive practice, and no one's not welcome, and you know, to try and, as you've said, you know, make modifications and never to offer it from a place of, we need to get you beyond where you are now to this place where you'll be okay. It's like, however you show up today is okay already. It's perfect as you are right now, And what do you need today? And quite often when we ask that question, people have no idea because they've never asked themselves. They just know, I need to not be here. It might be, I need not to be in this body. I need not to be in this mind. I need to be in a different set of circumstances. And part of that might be genuinely because of their situation and they do need something to shift. Or partly it could be because, as we've said, capitalism has sold them that you will be okay. You'll find love. You'll find peace. You'll find wealth when you're skinny.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get any of that until you're, I mean, I remember, I'm mortified that I'm remembering this now. I remember being about 17 and I left home at 16. I left home really young and I was in a house share with this other four girls and two of us were big. And I remember saying to the other older, bigger one, who was a bit older than me, she must be about 25 or something, I said, we've got to go on a diet. We're never going to meet a man this size. Look at the competition out there. And we both were like freaking starving ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, I'd gone through years and years of anorexia. So I kind of went through anorexia, fat, skinny, bulimia, anorexia. I did that up until I was in my 30s. And then I went, stuff this.
Yeah.
And I think the yoga practice had taken me to a place where I'd gone, I love myself too much to hurt myself now. And if the way I nourish myself means I'm going to be bigger, then so be it. And that, and I do believe it was the consistency of my yoga practice that took me there, because it certainly wasn't anything else. but that's the thing. It's like capitalism sells us that we, until we are the shape that they deem is acceptable, then we're never going to get what we need out of life. And they're invested in holding us in that space.
Yeah.
Because the minute we're not in that space, we don't buy the leggings, we don't buy the diet food, we don't buy the book or the program or jump onto some frigging 6-month thing with some coach. I mean, that's the whole thing. And actually, I feel yoga should be pointing us away from that every single time we step into our practice, however that looks.
What I also don't understand is, like, there is more money to be made in being inclusive. Okay. I think we come from this, like, and I'm not saying that should be the reason to do it, but if that's the reason to make it better, like, you know, whatever's going to actually make things better, I'm very for. But in the same, I think clothes is a great example. Like, they tell you that there was this one body type you have to spend all this money to get there. And also you can't buy the clothes you want to buy until you get there. And then any brand that does extended sizing, the extended sizing sells out, is the first to go, is that where they make all their money. But the brands don't want to do it because they don't want fat people in their clothes. So they also won't make money because people don't like fat people. And I found, as an inclusive practitioner, like, all of these studios that are not welcoming and inclusive and don't have genuinely inclusive offerings. Like, I have so many people come to my online practice from all over the world. So they're like, my local yoga studio is horrible. They make me feel terrible. I can't find any inclusive teachers. I can't find anyone who looks like me. And I'm like, well, my beginner's courses are full. You know, like, my online yoga is really busy. Like, people are desperate for an inclusive practice. Like, they are desperate. And I understand that people have gone, oh, the people we make money off are the ones who are really invested in the practice. So we're going to teach these advanced classes and for people who, like, already have a dedicated practice, because that's where the money is to be made. That's how we keep it going. And you have to really, you know, I don't think if you were uninclusive and you became inclusive, there might be like a shifting period. But I really believe it's what people are absolutely desperate for. And there are people with money who want to spend it on teachers that value them, that have skilled themselves in the way to support them. And I don't understand why people don't get that. And not in a way where I'm like, well, it's going to make you, like, so rich, we must do it to make you so rich. But I'm like, that this Soho House, like, exclusivity thing doesn't work anymore. The studios who are doing that are not making loads of money. Like, they're not doing well. And people, I think, especially post-pandemic, they just want to feel good. Like, we had these years of feeling so isolated, so alone, so without community. Our bodies, a lot of us changed in that time. A lot of us had big life shifts in that time, big things that happened. People, I believe people, there are more people now who are uninvested in this punishment model of, like, I think also people felt like if you feel bad about yourself, you're going to show up every day to try and change yourself. And if I may empower you to feel good, you might only need to come once a week. But also you're opening, you're widening your audience so much. And to me, it's so like, if you make the mats a bit further apart, people will come back because they're more comfortable. If you offer options, if you train your teachers, you're going to have a better, more dedicated, just like more diverse audience. And I don't think the route should be to make money, but I think there is more money in inclusive practices than people think there is. And also, you are serving more people, you are widening your audience, you therefore have the space to do more.
Yeah. So what you're effectively saying is, it doesn't make any logical sense. If your agenda is to make money, you can make money, probably more money, if you became more inclusive.
Yeah.
But is that, obviously, as yoga teachers, that isn't our only goal. But if it's your job, I remember when I first did my early trainings, the teacher I had, you know, he had a job. And he taught once a week, and he gave the money he earned to charity. And he said, I don't believe we should charge for yoga. And that, he said, that's my personal feeling. Mm-hmm. He said, no one would come if I didn't charge. So I think it was £3 a class or something ridiculous. Yeah, yeah. He said, and I give it to someone in need. And he did that for years. And that was his thing. And I never really got that far. You don't get it. But actually, as time has passed, I can see how when you bring in money to, and this is for another podcast really, but when you bring in money to a practice that is as profoundly spiritual and deep as yoga, it can get messy, and you have to really be careful to walk that line.
Yeah, for sure.
In a really, you know, sensitive way, because actually we do still need to, you know, we need to earn a living, we need to pay our insurances, we need to do our CPD, we need to have supervision if we're doing this well, need to, you know, continue educating ourselves, and we need to live and not inspire in a place of poverty, so that you know that we're resourced enough to step onto the mat. So I don't know that I entirely agree with him, but I can kind of see where he was coming. Over the years, I've definitely seen where he's coming from.
Oh, for sure. And I know lots of people who teach part-time alongside, teach one or two classes a week and have another job, and I think there's a lot more security, safety in that route. I think to want to do it full time, it's really hard. It's really, really hard. And I think also you were I ran this theatre company before. I have like a bit of a background in business, a bit of a background in marketing, which is helpful. And also what it allows me to do is to offer things low cost and market them well, so that they go to many people. So the person coming is not paying loads of money. I'm getting paid enough of my time in order to live. So there's ways. And I think I'm doing my first retreat in August, and I felt really conflicted for a long time about doing a retreat, because it's not cheap.
No.
And in a cost of living crisis, like also I'm looking at ways that maybe I can offer something in the UK that is more cost effective, more accessible, but there's no way to do this particular retreat without charging a lot of money for it. And I sat with that for a really long time, and then I was like, I have so much on offer that is low cost. I have really accessible in-person and online classes that people can come to and practice with me with. So if people have the money, and they, like, lots of people are asking me about retreats, and I'm like, well, if that was all I was offering, then like maybe that's a problem. But I do have these financially accessible offerings. And I think for me, it's really important as a practitioner to have something on offer that I could afford to go to. Yeah. Or if I was low income, like if, you know, hopefully, you know, I will build my income to a place that is more sustainable. And then there will still be a low cost offering for someone from a low income background.
It's a really challenging thing, isn't it? Because as we just said, you know, the practice, wouldn't it be lovely to be able to offer it to everybody for free? But let's be honest, in the capitalist society we live in, we offer it for free. The people that come to it for free, in my experience, are the ones that could absolutely afford to pay for it.
Yeah, for sure.
And the people that can't afford to pay for it because of shame or whatever reason, they don't come. And so, you know, it's a bit of a tricky thing. And interesting thing you said right at the beginning is, your fat people are paid less. I didn't know that. Is that true?
Say that, fat people, there's I don't have the information of the study, but there are like studies on how weight stigma impacts employment and pay rates. I was on the Maintenance Phase podcast. Those guys are amazing. I would really, really recommend if you want more research around diets, weight stigma, really thoroughly well-researched podcast. They are very good with their science and their stats, and people across the board, weight discrimination means lower levels of employment and lower levels of pay. I cannot remember to what degree.
Yeah, well, it's, you recommended that to me, and I've been listening to a few of their episodes. They're actually quite funny, aren't they?
Well, yeah, that's what helps, isn't it? Yeah. It's so joyful to listen to. Like, it's a really great mix of information and like just great hosting.
Yeah, and you also recommended to me a book called Yoke.
Yeah,
real. I mean, really, again, I felt really, you know, challenged by some of the language and stuff. It was good for me. It's like, yeah. My comfort zone. Can you say a few words about Yoke? I mean, I think it was, how did that sit with you when you read it?
Well, it's Jasmine Stanley's second book. I read her first book, Everybody Yoga, which is a bit more aimed at people who live in bigger bodies, who haven't felt comfortable to practice yoga, as a sort of here's my story and like guide in towards the practice. It's a really great book if you're a teacher, really great to understand a fat experience if you don't live in a fat body. And just like a lovely book. But Yoke is definitely more like guttural and powerful. It's a collection of essays about Jessamine's experience as a fat, Black, queer yoga teacher. There's like a particularly awful story in it where they get to be on the cover of a big yoga magazine, and they go to the day to go and see it, and it was like very exciting, very big opportunity, and they go and they can't find themselves because they've done a double cover with a smaller body teacher because they kind of felt that it was high risk and they never communicated that to her or her management. And I think there's so many stories in it about how the yoga world really treats teachers who are othered, and how those teachers who are othered, like, we twist ourselves up trying to fit into those molds, trying to be good enough, and we will never be good enough because we will never be the things that you want us to be. And how much freedom and celebration there is in just like truly embracing who you are as a teacher. I found it a very difficult read. I found it very emotional, but I also found it like deeply joyful and hopeful. And I don't think it was with an intent, like, I don't know if it was with an intention to be solution focused. It's just hearing someone's experience and how they think and feel. And it's an experience we don't get to hear from a lot. And
I agree.
I really would recommend it to any teacher, any practitioner, but especially if you do not live in a marginalized body across the board. I think it's just so lovely to hear someone's experience and written so beautifully. And it's a collection of essays as well, which is so nice to dip in and out of, which I really like as a format, as someone who is very dyslexic and struggles to read for long periods of time.
We're in the dyslexic club together.
Yeah.
I'm a big reader, and I listen to Yoke on Audible, and I listened to it when I went to Italy for a week to work, I had to do some pretty heavy work on the studio and stuff, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to go away, be by myself, and just where no one can talk to me, and just, I don't know what anyone's saying either, very much. Yeah. Italian. And I listened to Yoke in my breaks in the afternoon, and I'm glad it was in my breaks because I needed time to recover, you know, in a good way, because it was like, it was, as you used the word guttural, it was really, it was bits of it. I was like, no, did that happen to you? Oh my God. It's, you know, it's dreadful. And also really relatable, actually.
Yeah, for sure. I
really relate to a lot of the things she was, or they were discussing. I may well reach out. Hopefully they'll come on the podcast and have a chat. But that, so thank you so much for that recommendation. Listen, it's been so wonderful to talk to you. I feel like I've really understood a little bit more around my own shame, my own uncomfortableness around being in a larger body as a yoga teacher, and, you know, why maybe I've hidden away for as long as I have, you know, hidden behind my head and shoulder shots. And I'm going to challenge myself to put some more full body shots. I'm going to tag you.
Yeah, great, do it. I think I just think we're so like to feel the full expanse and joy of your body. There is nothing like it. And that is not something that is reserved to a one body type.
No.
But, and I don't believe even that people in smaller bodies are having, like, they have the thin privilege, sure, the way they move through the world is easier. And also, they're still being told to hate their bodies. They're still being told their bodies aren't good enough. Like, no one is safe.
No.
And I just want everyone to like or accept or to at least find neutrality in their bodies so that they can feel a sense of home in themselves.
Yes.
It's so powerful.
Yeah. If you were talking directly now to a practitioner who's maybe in a larger body that's been too afraid to come into a yoga class, what would you say to them?
Oh my God, I would be like, we need you. We need you in the space. We need you. And not that you should be some sort of, you know, lamb for the slaughter to for teachers who don't know how to teach your body. But if you are showing up in the space, it shows that that the want for it is there. The want for an inclusive practice is there. And also, I know this is labor, and I don't think people who are marginalized should have to do the work. But if you have a bad experience and you are able to, tell the studio, tell them that you have money you want to spend on your yoga practice, and the way that they are doing it right now is not serving this audience. Because ultimately, like we said, money talks. And I think there were so many classes I walked away from when I was younger feeling awful and horrible and hating my body, or feeling like I wasn't allowed to be in the space. And I wish I knew how dumb that was. And also, you know, understandable, but like, I wish I'd just gone like, you are not serving me. I deserve to be here. I deserve to have space held for me. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah, thank you. Lucy, how can people get in contact with you? We will put your Instagram handles up on the show notes, but is there any other way that people can access working with you?
Yeah, so I have a website. It's Lucy, the letter B, yoga.com. Everything I'm doing is there. So that's where you can find practicing with me online, practicing with me in person in South London. I will have, by the time I think this comes out, I will have another retreat on offer for next year.
Ooh,
so if you want to come to Greece with me, you can do that there. And I also offer trainings for teachers. I have a training coming up at the end of September in London in person about how we can make more size inclusive practices. I will be offering that online at some point, and I also do that for studios, and if you have like groups of teachers who want to get together and do that as well. Yeah, it's a good time.
thank you so much. And finally, is there anything you'd like to sort of say to people that maybe have been listening to this, how they can take care of themselves after they've maybe they've been a little bit triggered or have deep feelings around some of the things we've been talking about?
I would say just do something for yourself that makes you feel really nice. Like if that's sitting or like quietly or having a nap or like eating your favorite snack or going for a walk. Like I also would like to say that if anyone feels like something they've done as a teacher or practitioner has been called out, if they feel like they've recognized themselves in some of the ways that I personally think the industry should change, that is so understandable. That that is how the industry is, how it is. We are taught so much hate towards different bodies, and I am a fat person living in a fat body, and I have stigmatized fat people, and it's okay to make mistakes, and it's okay to learn, and it's okay to mess up. And I would say the world around us is creating that, and we don't need to feel a sense of personal shame, but we do have a responsibility to do better.
Thank you so much. This has been a wonderful conversation, and I hope to have you back again. We'll have another conversation in the future.
Yeah, we love.
Thank you so much for your time, for your speaking up, and for taking up the space you so deserve to take up. It's been great to chat to you.
Oh, you too. Thanks so much, Dawn.
to our listeners, I hope you have enjoyed the episode. I'm sure it's given you a lot to think about. Maybe you'll agree with some of it, maybe you'll not agree with some of it, and that's fine. That's entirely your choice. Please do, however, leave a review, preferably 5 stars, but you know, a review, all reviews are good reviews, and share with your friends and colleagues. It really does help to have these important conversations highlighted to everybody out there. So thank you for listening, and have a wonderful, wonderful day.